Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. But what keeps me in shape is that you can go to Twitter these days and see the Jews in a state that we haven't seen them in for a long time. And it reassures me that the world will always be funny, that there will always be developments to talk about and think about. What a spectacle we are seeing. And today I'd like to concentrate on something that Michael Shermer said. Suddenly he presents Matt justifying basically the Jewish ethnostate, that there are enough Jews apparently in the world to justify having an ethnostate. but anything that could be said in that direction would, of course, make it even more justifiable for white people to have an ethnostate. But not only can't we not have this, apparently we can't talk about it. We can't think about it. We can't exchange about it on YouTube. And none of these guys have ever truly stood against the censorship of the racialist right wing. You can hear them say general things about censorship, but they never really stood in solidarity against the censorship of white identitarians. And it's coming back to bite them, because I've been wondering for many years, what are these Jews who don't talk about white ethno-nationalism? What are they thinking? Because there's, of course, the far left race denier type of Jewish intellectual. That is one thing. Certainly it exists. But I've always wondered, these middle ground skeptics like Michael Shermer, what do they ultimately think about this question? How do they react when they hear a white person claiming that having a white nation would be justified and that self-determination is a noble goal to pursue? And what I discovered today in the way the Jews are reacting to the Israeli stuff is, they probably think absolutely legitimately. They think it's a legitimate thing, self-determination by race. They just don't care about the particular race that is white people because they don't feel part of it. And ultimately, they care as much about the question of ethno-nationalism, but you have to have an Israeli situation for them to truly come out emotional about it, to truly come out defending a side, because probably when they hear of white ethno-nationalism, they feel it's not their affair. And I would suggest that they are wrong on this. They should have cared about it. They should have understood that white ethno-nationalism has always been in their interest too. It was in their interest to keep our nation white, just like it was in the interest even of non-whites in our nations to keep them white. I think it's too late for this realization on their side, but it's very insightful for us to look into how do the Jews react to a situation in which they need and want and feel the obligation to create an impression of a group attack against their group. And it's not beautiful at all. We even see some irrationality on the side of Gad Sahad. all right. I wanted to share this. I shared it on Twitter. And it's a letter that I've sent in my personal life to a woman. And it's not to shame the woman. I don't think that she's done anything super wrong. But she has been displaying at first a great enthusiasm to start a family with me. And then every time there were details that were to be resolved, it was always one more obstacle. And I felt that she wasn't totally into the program of, hey, at our age, if you want to start a family, it needs to be right now. And it's like you need to be taking a plane ticket last week and come to see me because we need to start insemination. So I'm presenting this email not to shame her at all, because I think she's a great person. And I think that there is still a chance that this email will awaken, and it did awaken a positive response in her. So I'm very grateful. But I just wanted to show this email to the guys in the audience, because sometimes you do have to go a little hard, and you do have to set your standards and explain your position. Of course, this kind of email will totally filter out leftist woman, normies, women who have plenty of time ahead to make all sorts of choices, and they don't really care about you. But in a way, you want to filter that kind of woman out. What's interesting is the kind of woman that can survive an email like this. And in her case, she did. So she was writing to me about, first, I had told her, all right, let's stop calling each other, because I'm not into phone relationships. I thought that with you, you would be coming directly to my home and would be fucking right there, and I'd be inseminating you. And clearly, you've been delaying, and you've been blocking and stepping back on everything you had told me initially. And so I said, let's just end it. It won't work. And then she wrote back to me and saying, oh, I'm heartbroken. I was starting to be attached to you, blah, blah, blah. So I said, all of this emotional framing does not resolve the situation, which is that if you are not in the mindset to follow my lead immediately toward the building of a family, you'll be too old to start a large family by the time you accept to follow it. I've watched the video already, and it's a good speech about some subject, but here I have to see if you are willing to put in sacrifices like I do. I've already put myself out there for 1 hour per day for almost my whole adult life. There literally isn't a corner of my inner self that's left to discover. You have plenty more information on me than I have on you. You have my public personality. So the risks that I take in investing efforts into an uncertain relationship are, I find, much bigger on my side than yours. In fact, there's nothing that you're doing now that you couldn't do by my side in Canada. Like, for example, this. So it's hard to identify what keeps you here, what keeps you there. On top of it, I'm covering all of the expenses. It boils down to this. I have made my estimations of the red flags in your case, your age, our religious differences, your attachment to your mother, your attachment to this, your attachment to that. And I estimate that there's a 5% chance you're a Fed, 20% chance you're a New York Times journalist, and 70% chance you're none of these, but for some reason you won't want to build a family with me, which you'll decide somewhere between now and some future time point, after which I will have invested my time, energy, and perhaps even money at entertaining this relationship. It's just not worth it on an open-ended commitment from your side without deadlines and specifications. And it's not worth it if all of it is with a deadline for meeting in March. Just meeting, not even breeding. So you tell me some other deal and I'll be ready to hear it. But under the current conditions, which I'm not highlighting to annoy you or criticize you, but just so you understand my perspective on things, how could I share my true self with someone who I have to show méfiance toward until she's pregnant and who appears to be willing to take all sacrifices from me while doing none on her side? Here's one thing that could facilitate all of it on both sides. You are wondering about where you want to live and whether you want to make the jump. Sure, I can understand that. It's tough. On my side, I'm wondering if you'll ever carry my baby. So let's get this resolved. Why don't we reproduce now without commitment from you that you'll move to here? That way I can be sure you're not a New York Times journalist and that my emotional investment is worth reproductive benefits. Then I'll be totally willing to invest months or years to talk to you on the phone while you choose whether you want to live with me. Sometimes you just have to lay it that way. And I don't know to what extent she's decided to go on to a more productive route, but she did answer I understand where you're coming from. I hadn't considered this perspective before. I actually would be willing to make babies with you the first time we meet. I really want to have your baby. I'm on board. So it sounds like a positive response. We'll see if she can follow up on this, on making this a reality, because it's very easy to say these things, but in the end, the question is, do you take the means to make them happen? So hopefully we get there. But if we don't get there, then it's just a minor loss of time in my life that I've had. You know, maybe she's a journalist, and I'm thinking, so how do I have to treat the risk that she's a journalist? Well, she's a journalist up to the point where she gets pregnant. So up to whenever it is that I can inseminate her, I have to consider her a journalist. So it's sad because it's not super interesting to have so much mefiance, but how do I tell the difference? Are you just a woman who puts a lot of blocks along the way, or are you a true woman interested in family building? It's basically impossible to know until it happens. So I will continue pressing for this moment to come as quick as possible. But in the end, I will also not invest time until I can get what has been promised here. Ruffman says, JF, you are a man of great foresight and planning. So I asked the man who wrote TRP, JF, what is your plan if you are in bed fucking an inseminating woman? And then Mama JF knocks on the door and says, JF, I want to come back. Well, if that happens, my position has always been the same, which is I can always take a female back if she is still reproductive and if there are still interest for me to continue reproduction with her. But I have to be single at that moment where she comes back. If she comes back and I am under a promise to another female, then I will be bound by my promise to the current female. So, and that is very much in line with what Mama JF told me before she went away. She said, yeah, bring a new wife here, no problem. I want you to be happy. So I feel I have a blessing of Mama JF to totally do that. Lendald says, JF wants his very own personal soccer team. Not necessarily a soccer team, but if I could have a team of developers, a team of maybe a development team, that would be nice. Tringmamel sends a super chat. He says, JF, after watching the Wheat Waffles video, and my interaction with University Police Society no longer wants men to ask out girls at a college. Well, I know. I understand that this is the case, but society doesn't want men to do anything. So it's like if you start from what society wants, you will never reproduce. So you have to violate society. You have to violate certain social norms if you're going to make some progress, because society is totally hostile to the male side of dating, to the male side of sexuality, to the heterosexual male side of sexuality. And on the other hand, society is all about rewarding and clapping to gay sex, to trans feelings, to all this. So anything that makes you drift away from reproduction, they will reward you along the way. Anything that brings you toward reproduction, they will try to stop you. So you are in a war for survival. So yes, Shring Mamel was telling me that there's this video out there of a guy who did the same as him. He tried to ask women out on the university campus. And the same thing happened to this guy as happened to Shring Mamel, but this guy did it on YouTube. He did it in a video. But the same thing happened. He got banned from the campus. But Shrek Mamel was a little more clever. He did it on the public roads. This guy did it on the private territory of the university on the campus. But yeah, it's yes, society doesn't want this. And yes, you have to ignore society because your existence has priority over society. Americans need to wake up. Zionists have not only occupied and conquered Palestine, they have also occupied and conquered America, says Lucas Gage.
I want to show you something, and because I know what you're thinking. I know what you're probably thinking right now. You're thinking, oh, sure, Rick Sanchez, of course. What you're probably talking about is one of those obscure state laws like the one they have in Alaska that says if you accidentally kill a moose, you have to eat it. That's actually a law in Alaska, by the way. There's one in Georgia that says it's illegal to sleep on a boat for more than 30 days. True. No, we're not talking about an obscure law. What we're talking about is an Israeli loyalty oath law that is becoming so common in the United States, it's now pervasive. Take a look at the map. You see the red states? See all of those red states? 26 states have enacted this loyalty oath legislation. And let me show you the other one, the navy blue ones, the blue ones you see there. That's where this law is now pending. So 26 acted on, passed, 13 pending, only 11 states, the light.
Yeah, well, we had been covering this a long time ago on the show, and yes, it's amazing that in this conflict there are laws that are totally in violation of the First Amendment in America and that are totally forcing you and forcing a lot of people out there to take side on this issue and to take the side of Israel. Now, I thought about it a lot today, and I think I have a solution for Israel. I think I have analyzed the causes of violence. I have thought about what causes violence. I have listened to the leftists for years, and I have a good idea of what to do with Israel to reduce violence. It's quite simple. Intolerance and a lack of diversity is the big problem of Israel. The violence and outbursts we have seen are all either motivated directly by bigotry, racial hatred, or a lack of education about the goodness of diversity. Or they are a direct response to the systemic oppression stemming from these realities. My recommendation for Israel, as someone who has collated an extensive number of peer-reviewed articles from prestigious universities on Google Docs, is to 1. Increase Israeli diversity with adopt a sub-Saharan African program and other initiatives. 2. Offer a decolonized and de-racialized historical curriculum to Israeli youth. 3. Monitor Israeli extremism, radicalization, and Israeli incel activities on internet forums. 4. Empower workers through worker co-ops that they collectively control. 5. Increase the representation of women and minorities of Israel in the Israeli political class. There, have I forgotten anything? And people are listing all sorts of things that could have been included in this list. It's interesting to see the ideas of people. People are suggesting stopping the ethnostate status of Israel, of course. That sounds like a good idea. People are talking about promoting LGBT activism and promoting LGBT representation within the army. Very interesting. Mark D's channel says, my guess, this woman is the Lauren woman that interviewed JF recently. It's obvious she was looking for a scalp, and I think she may not have given up yet. Well, yeah, I mean, I've thought about it. I've thought about the possibility that this is some kind of journalism, this woman approaching me. And I'm like, suppose it was some kind of journalism. They wouldn't discover anything about me. that I've not said already publicly on this show. And so they would have nothing to add. It would just be my personality. People would get to hear about it in a mainstream media article. And so if it's journalism, I guess I can dedicate some amount of time to this relationship, to the extent that I would dedicate some time for an interview and for getting exposure. So it's like I'm not going to engage on a phone relationship as long as I don't have proof of pregnancy. But I can just invest the amount of time that I would invest in an interview for a regular appearance on any sort of show. Phantom of the Odyssey says, you would think the army at some point would have said enough is enough with the Middle East. The army of what? The army of America? The army of Israel? Is enough in the sense of not getting involved in it? Well, the problem is the American army is completely under control, under Israeli control. So there's no, let's not get involved in this. It's not our fight. It is our fight because we are in a government that is occupied by a foreign force. And as long as that's the case, it will always be considered as a thing of priority to be defending Israeli interest. Now, here's the based math of Michael Shermer, which amazingly, I've never seen him do that math for white societies. I don't know, what's keeping you, Michael Shermer, from joining white ethno-nationalism with this kind of argument? And someone was pointing this out. He was saying, now do Christians. Michael Shermer was saying, there are 1.8 billion Muslims in the world. There are 50 majority Muslim nations in the world. There are 16.1 million Jews in the world. There is one Jewish nation in the world. Do not Jews have the same right to nationhood as everyone else? That is very interesting. So ethnicity gives you the right to a nation. How about Europeans having their nation? How about Europeans being able to care about the demographic constitution of their nation? Michael Shermer has been quite silent on this one, and I've never heard him pull out the mat to justify keeping European society white. And yet we are a dead under the current birth rates and immigration rates, we are headed toward no white nations surviving in terms of a majority. Or if there are any majority surviving, they will be always at the border of falling into a minority. So it does seem that Michael Shermer here stands for ethnicity equals right to nation. That is one view of the right to nation. Some other people might think differently. Some people, like I heard Alzey, say basically the right to nation is a right that you gain by fighting and by basically expelling anyone else who would want to live in your nation. And so basically that is a might is right perspective on the right of a nation to exist. And Michael Shermer here says, no, ethnicity is a good ground to form a nation, to form a minimal nation that has taken the means to ensure that the majority stays in a certain way, in this case, a Jewish majority. I will say to Michael Shermer, you have the right to initiate any nation you want to initiate, but that doesn't give you the right to expel people who were already there. That doesn't give you the right to do it in violence and genocide. And that doesn't give you the right to force other to join this nation if they were there before you and they don't wish to be part of your nation, which is exactly what the state of Israel has been doing. So it's not a question of am I Jewish, therefore I deserve a nation, or am I white, therefore I deserve a nation? It's a matter of can you do it while finding a place that is purchasable on the free market, where you can do it without violating the rights of already existing people on there. You were unable to do this for Israel. Eva Karen Bartlett, another victim of YouTube censorship, after over 15 years of having a YouTube account, now while Israel is genociding Palestinians, YouTube has suddenly closed my account completely. This is not coincidental. I had many videos which I took in Gaza under Israel's bombs in 2009 and 2012. Removed your channel from YouTube, hate speech policy. She was showing the reality of the terror Palestinians endured under relentless Israeli bombing and sniping, and she has backed up everything on Odyssey. Well, YouTube is definitely not the place to have a serious conversation on the current war. A Palestinian child who has lost her parents due to Israeli airstrikes in Gaza.
كان طفلة من غزة استشهدت والدها ووالدتها في قصف إسرائيلي على قطاع غزة.
Brought to the hospital, we have dramatic scenes. Israeli TV journalist instructs viewers to mass report tweets that do not support Israel. Report people who don't support Israel. So this is a kind of strategy we have seen before. The left, well, in this case, it's not a left-right conflict, the left has been in the past trying to censor any opposing argument so that only their argument would stand at the end, and they've been relatively successful at pulling it. Now we have the same strategy being pulled on the side of Israel. In other words, if they can get any positive voice for the Palestinian side shut down, they will be the only argument left that normies can be exposed to. Rudy Lacid says, this is why you have to at least re-upload live streams on another platform. Yes. Charlie Kirk is being accused of being an anti-Semite because he's not pro. And we're seeing this happen with the people who have joined the kosher center right, if you will. The Matt Walsh of this world, the Charlie Kirk of this world, they're basically flirting with Jewish power. But at the same time, they have been trying and trying hard and sometimes desperately to kind of imitate the genuine right-wing thought that forms the basis of, say, my shows and Nick Fuentes' shows. They have been trying to integrate as much as this Christian / ethno-nationalism line of argumentation, but they've been, of course, faced with the fact that this is not what their boss wants, and this is there will be tension in the coming months. You will see a tension happening between this branch of kind of the most radical part of the center right, the most Christian part of the center right, and the most non-Jewish part of the center right, because here you have, for example, Charlie Kirk not sufficiently kneeling to Israel, and so we have Ben Domenech saying, if Charlie Kirk remains the head of TPUSA, the right has an anti-Semite problem that will follow them into the coming elections. And of course, what does Charlie Kirk does? Exactly the wrong thing, which is ultimately the difference between him and a Nick Fuentes. Instead of saying, you know, fuck this whole system of framing by which you're trying to extort me to think something that I don't think, and you're trying to push me through threats and through appeals to this word anti-Semitism, which you use as a smear Instead, what does he do? He kneels to Israel and the Jews. We sponsor 300 young people a year to visit Israel. We do daily on-campus activities offering pro-Israel activism, supplying to hundreds of thousands of students. We have hosted multiple young Jewish leadership summits over the years with thousands of Jewish students in attendance. Just last week, I was defending Israel against SJP activists at a campus event at UCF. So it's like, yeah, we do this, we do that. I'm not anti-Semite. But society will not move forward, Charlie, as long as we don't have intellectuals with balls who say to these people, if you have an argument against what I've said, I'm willing to discuss it. But if you're just here to wave your threatening labels, we're not negotiating on this anymore. Four Palestinian boys aged 8 to 10 were assassinated by the Israeli while playing football on the beach. They were playing football with journalists and they were shelled by the Israeli IOF forces. So this is the mother of one of the victims. All right, that must be quite traumatizing to know that your children have just died. iHypocrite calls Ben Shapiro Benocide Sharpnel. That is an interesting new nickname for Ben Shapiro. And he explains back then how civilized countries wage war.
Meanwhile, you have Russia. And Russia is not a first world power. Russia is a second world power. As they suggest, it is a gas station with a nuclear arsenal. That doesn't mean it's not geostrategically important. It doesn't mean that it can't cause all sorts of headaches and problems for the West. It doesn't mean that it can't turn off the gas spigot and cause serious problems for Western and Eastern Europe. What it does mean is that when Russia goes to war, Russia does not go to war in the same way the United States does. It does not go to the war in the same way that Israel or the UK or NATO does. When Russia goes to war, Russia basically just uses overwhelming force and kills enormous numbers of civilians.
It's amazing that he's saying this. He's putting Israel on the side of the clean countries, not going to make secondary casualties, not going to go savagely into a residential neighborhood and used banned weapons like white phosphorus. He's presenting Russia as this super dirty power that will just crunch its opponents. But the whole war that Russia led in Ukraine has been incredibly more clean than what is happening right now in Palestine. There were no moment in the Russia-Ukraine war where thousands of civilians would die in a single day. That didn't happen. We've always had very surgical strikes, some civilian casualties that are unavoidable, but they're unavoidable when Russia does it, but they're also unavoidable when the US does it. But what we see in Israel versus Palestine is a totally different category of war. It's really just inducing civilian suffering for apparently the fun of it. Because they've been saying, oh yeah, we will come with air raids in the north, everyone must flee. And then they're saying, oh, we're pausing that, it turns out. So they're causing dramatic movements of population that are trying to escape. Some of them, while escaping, they're getting bombarded by Israeli forces. Some of them die in the process of trying to escape. So they are creating confusion within a civilian population, and they are creating much more confusion than what the Russians have done. If anything, the Russians come out from the last few days as an exemplary nation in terms of leading a clean war, sparing civilians as much as they can.
And we're now seeing reports that the Russians don't even have the supplies they need in order to fight this battle. What that means is that the war gets ugly and it gets ground down. It's very vicious. Street fighting, lots of civilian deaths. And this has been part of Russia's playbook for quite a while. They've been using this since Chechnya in the late 1990s.
Russia and Ukraine are much bigger countries than Israel, and yet the count that Israel has reached in terms of Palestinian victims on the civilian side has never been achieved by Russia, not in a single day of that war for a whole year and a half. What Israel has been doing in terms of the counts of victims were in the range of 1,700 civilian casualties. Or were they all civilians? It's harder to say when it's a Palestine. There's no official hiring in the army. Anyone can be a little bit of both. But given the number of children that were in that count, I would say roughly that there was probably a majority proportion of that count that was civilian. There is not a single day in the Russia versus Ukraine war where 1,700 casualties have happened in civilian settings. Cloud Warmer says, Shapiro is content for boomers. I still find it humorous. He is fanatically ethno-nationalist for Israel, but not for the West. He said he doesn't care about the demographic changes in the U.S. He near constantly calls for war, but would never fight himself. A former colleague said he is a Mossad agent. Yes, that is a good description of the population. Here we see some of the boys being carried who were killed on the beach. And some of the boys were injured. By the way, a lot of these videos come from Soleiman Hamed, and I want to say a very positive word for this guy. He's been one of the serious guys on this affair. He is a co-host who has been with the Mario Nafal podcast, the Twitter Spaces, for a long time, if I understand correctly. That's where I first heard of him. He has shown himself to be a fair host of his own Twitter Spaces. I've seen him bring people like Lucas and people like Keith Woods. So I think that he's great at first being honest, inviting people who may have an anti-Israeli position. And he has himself done a lot of quality reporting, a lot of bringing videos to the surface that expose Israeli wrongdoing in this thing. Now, I see his name, Soleiman Hamed. And so I'm like, should we be surprised? Should we be surprised that I don't know where that name's come from, but it's somewhere between India and the Middle East and North Africa, some Arab Middle East place of some kind, I'm sure. And within this population, there is a natural resistance to the idea of Israel in the Middle East, because there is a long history of this being perceived as ultimately an enmity toward Muslims and a movement of the Jews to penetrate a nation and install onto a nation that was due to be Muslim and that has been colonized by Muslims before. And I saw a video of Ben Shapiro today, and he was saying, I will debunk the idea that the land of Israel belongs to the Muslims. But all he has to debunk this are biblical references of, oh, see, we were here before. We were there before Islam even existed. Okay. Maybe you were there 5,000 years ago. Maybe you were there 2,000 years ago. But eventually, there came to be Muslims there. and you came to displace them to establish Israel. That is what we mean. But when we say that Israel has been built on the violation of rights of the locals that were there, we don't mean that they were there forever. We don't mean that there were Muslims on this particular land for the last 7 million years. And yes, DK Shadow says, the 100% historically accurate Bible. Yeah, it's even hard to say whether the Bible points to these locations actually, or whether it was some other location. Like, we don't know when the Bible says Israel, if it's the Israel of today. And we don't even know what the people involved in the Bible, who they came to be. Like, I was hearing in a description of that video that Palestine has been named that way to kind of make a reference to the Philistines, the enemies of the Jews in the Bible. That's interesting. I didn't know this, but apparently Palestine was named that way by the UK or something like this. The UK has decided to call it that way to make a reference to the Philistines of the Bible. That's an interesting thought, but things are so mixed up. Who were the Philistines? Who do they correspond to today? That is very hard to establish. Here's another man who's at the edge. He lives at the edge, just like Charlie Kirk. Oh, it's the Romans, not the UK. The Romans would have, back in the first century, says Lendald Guntram. Oh yeah, okay. I got it wrong. New guy says the Sea People. Oh, he's thinking about the Sea People. Matt Walsh is living at the edge, just like Charlie Kirk. He's been entertaining a very special form of exploitation of the situation with Jews, the media, and the Daily Wire, where it's interesting what Matt Walsh does. Matt Walsh is a guy who approaches his coverage and philosophy from a genuinely Christian perspective, white Christian American perspective. And there he is being employed by the Jewish center-right kosher media. And it's a special relationship. He's kind of needed for them. Because if you don't have a Matt Walsh at the Daily Wire, then the Daily Wire is like Prager University. It's like all of these other media outlets that are just purely Jewish. And the fact is, these media outlets, they have a failure to connect with the people. That is the problem of traditional media outlets. There's a new generation rising. They need different kinds of argument. They need some of that more Christian appeal. And a Daily Wire without a Matt Walsh would be a Daily Wire missing something. So in a way, he's very much needed. He's very much needed for Daily Wire. And yet the Daily Wire probably is annoyed by some of his positioning. Like this: the absolute number one priority of the United States right now should be to protect American lives and avoid getting our nation involved in the disastrous conflict overseas. This should be so obvious and uncontroversial that it doesn't even need to be said. So he doesn't use much words here. He doesn't use many words. That he doesn't say the word Israel in this, doesn't say the word Palestine, doesn't say Hamas, but we know what he's referring to. He's saying that getting involved, basically getting involved to arbitrage this conflict in any way, and to be rooting so hard for Israel would be an error. He's basically saying that he's adopting a fundamentally different approach to this conflict than his boss, Ben Shapiro. That America first is the way to go. So I said in response to this tweet, when will Matt Walsh be fired? When is it that Ben Shapiro gets tired of him? But it's not as easy as this. He doesn't have to be fired. There can be many processes happening. He could be bought out. So there could be at some point a bunch of Zionists, if this kind of positioning was to become too America first and annoying for them that he's not siding strongly enough with Israel, they could buy out his position at Daily Wire. They could say to Ben Shapiro, we're going to send you that many millions if you fire this guy. That could happen. It could also happen that basically Matt Walsh represents the sacrifice that the kosher side of media in the Daily Wire is willing to do. They might think, you know what? I'd rather have a guy like Matt Walsh that captures an audience that we wouldn't have captured anyway. And he's bringing them to us. And then if someone is interested at hearing a little more about Israel, we send them to a Ben Shapiro video, and then we're developing a gateway, basically. We're developing a pipeline from people who would be Christian and uninterested in the conflict to eventually present them arguments with Ben Shapiro. So it's possible that the positioning of Matt Walsh is not that much of a problem for Ben Shapiro. But ultimately, the question is not so much whether it's a problem for Ben Shapiro. The question is there some billionaire out there for which it becomes a problem? And then Matt Walsh will get kicked. He will get bought out. Just like they bought out so many YouTubers. When they started receiving money from the ADL and YouTube started bragging, we're doing a partnership with the ADL. They are giving staff and resources. And then you saw one after the other, all of the requests of the ADL, the right-wing extremists and white nationalists, all of them kicked from YouTube, kicked from Twitter. All of this are money deals that are happening in the back scene. Silver Spider sends a super chat. He says, hey, Jeff, my best friend, white, married, has two siblings who I've known since we were five, just told me he's never having kids. He said him and his wife don't have the best genes. I really think it's because they vacation and go to restaurants all the time. Any ideas on how to save these pandas yet? Well, you don't want to save these pandas that much. Here, I am playing a role as a public person of displaying a message to a lot of people. And I have some kind of responsibility because I think that among 1,000 people who hear my message, perhaps one or two will, perhaps it will make them realize, oh yeah, maybe have a baby a little earlier in their life, or maybe have a baby that they wouldn't have had otherwise. But if you're talking about single people like this, you are not capturing quality here. You're talking about people who are probably so hedonistic because they prefer this restaurant life rather than having babies. It's almost better that they disappear. So I would tell you, unless you have genetic involvement, those are your friends. If those are your friends, you don't have genetic involvement in their genetic success. So there's no reason for you to deploy any form of of energy investment to convince them of the contrary. If they were your brothers, if they were your children, maybe you would have some interest at pushing them a little bit. But friends, I've never combated much. I've said, you can say one sentence. You can say, bro, let me tell you, it's the greatest thing, and it's so sad that you will be pursuing meaningless stuff, but go for it. If that meaningless life of tourism and restaurants is what pleases you, that's fine, but let me tell you, it's a much deeper connection that you will get with the world when the world is populated by a being that depends on you and that you have created from nothing. You can say this if you want, but I wouldn't waste energy on it. Ultimately, they self-eliminate if they want. Popcorn Power says, I'm always glad to hear that JF takes quality genetic progeny seriously. But it's not quality genetic progeny. What I take seriously is the importance of letting the process of self-elimination happen naturally in society. That's what I take seriously. Now, I will not claim that this leads to quality or not quality. It's really just whatever works needs to work, and whatever doesn't work needs to not work. That is the big circular definition of the theory of evolution, but it is such an important circular definition. Basically, don't combat the natural. There's been claims about this photo as being a staged photo. It's been community annotated. It was posted by the official Israel account. Little Mary Jane's coloring books left open, a stuffed animal. This could be your child's bedroom. No words. And okay, so is Mary Jane a common name in Israel? So you had a Jewish Orthodox girl, like Israeli Jewish girl in the Israeli Jewish school, and her name was Mary Jane. Anyways, maybe it's a common name. I never traveled to Israel. I wouldn't know. Now they put the blood here, and people noted. They say the blood doesn't look real. Decoagulated blood and deoxygenated blood has a dark color to it that's expected. This is a bright red color. That is true. it does seem kind of liquidish, which is you typically see this liquidish thing in fake blood. The fake blood, the big difference is time on real blood will really, really solidify it into basically a coagulation, into a scab, basically. So to have that level of liquid on blood, typically it will be fake blood, or it could be very fresh, just that instantly came out of the body. But it's hard to imagine that this is very fresh, because you can see traces of displacement of bodies or displacement of some object, which are indicative that some time has been passing before they took the picture. Another note that people did is that the imprint of the blood onto the children's book appears to leave pink marks. Look at this. And that is not expected for real blood. Real blood diluting itself into... So it's not expected because this is an effect of colorants. Colorants, the tone of color that they will give is dependent on their concentration. And so if you dilute, you're going to get a pinkish and more pinkish and more pinkish. If it's a fake color, it's going to, and then it's going to dilute into transparency. Basically, pink is the transparent, the partly transparent equivalent of red in the coloring dimension. But I have never seen real blood be dilutable into paler colors like this. I have never seen this. So you would think if there was any sort of red part of the blood that has coagulated onto the color book, it would have obtained its very dark red, even black kind of scab color. Here it goes light pink, which makes you think that, yes, it is fake coloring being diluted into the paper. So the thing was community annotated. The community note said deoxygenated blood has a shade of dark red, so it is a staging. The blood is not pink. Now, I don't know for sure that this is not somehow, I don't know, weird illumination in the room, weird situation that I can't predict, and perhaps the photo was more fresh than claimed. There's still a possibility that this is real blood from a real victim, but definitely the evidence points toward a likely stage setup here. And when you think about the photo illustrating the empty shoes of the victim, the whole teddy bear thing, which they promote in the tweet itself, a coloring book left open, little Mary Janes, a stuffed animal, this could be your child's bedroom. This is all very indicative of a perfect picture. I did publish at some point in the Ukraine War a show that was called Picture Perfect. That seems a little bit too much of Picture Perfect. Silver Spider says, this looks kind of like Epstein's jail cell. I don't know what you mean there. Epstein jail cell had the drapes that Epstein has been using to hang himself. So I find it fascinating that Community Notes is daring enough to say, all right, we're going to make the call. We're going to say it's faked. I think it's a nice call. I do believe that the evidence tends toward this interpretation. But it's always hard to say, how do I call bullshit, you know? How do I say, yeah, for sure, that's a lie? It's a very tough line, but Community Notes has been very, interestingly, they've been very daring in their stuff when they do this. And I'm amazed. Lots of respect for what Community Notes is doing as part of this. As part of this war. Gad Saad totally goes into a collectivization-based argument. He says, I stand before you baffled by a new phenomenon that I call amnesia of causality, and in some cases from fellow academics, some of whom I know personally. The cognitive emotional distortion works as follows. A commits horrifying acts on B. B punches back. Sufferers of amnesia of causality deeply condemn the brutality of B because the first link of the causal chain is completely erased. It never existed. What A did never happened. Only B's response is open to scrutiny. Never mind the issue of supposed proportionality. A on B never happened. B on A is proof of B's evil. And the problem with this is he's treating groups as a single entity. When he's saying that we are ignoring the fact that Hamas, basically for him, Hamas and the Palestinians are A. And Israel is B. And for him, When we say that Israel is doing wrong here, is doing evil, we are forgetting that Hamas has done evil toward Israel. But here's the problem. The evil that Israel is directing at civilian populations in Palestine is not targeting civilians that are the ones that have done the evils against your Israeli rave. The people of Hamas that have done those attacks in Israel are the only one against whom a punishment argument can be made. You could go in there and shoot these Hamas militants who have kidnapped Israelis in your rave, and then you could make the argument, oh yeah, don't forget, they kidnapped people from us, they killed people on our side, now we're killing them. But you can't make this argument against the entire population of a continent, of a country. You can't make this argument against 2 million people, because 2 million people didn't kidnap your people at your Israeli rave. So I said, here, notice here our God treats all Palestinians and Israelis as N symbols A and B. He is trying to say that Palestinian kids getting their heads blown off was somehow deserved because they committed horrifying acts. But only treating Palestinians as a collective can he reach this conclusion. Was it the kid that got his head blown off who committed the evil acts? Or was it someone else from the group that Gad is lumping him in? Hasn't Gad spoken against such collectivization of guilt in the past? This is the problem with a clown like Gad Saad, who's always out there making these little jokes, these little passive-aggressive references against the left, but who never takes a principled stance. It's always mockery, and it's always, oh, look at how their thinking is bad here. But so when he comes out with these reflections, it's hard to find in his past whether there's inconsistency, because a statement by Gad Saad is never clear. It's always some loose, passive-aggressive, I'm going to make a joke like I'm talking like you're me and I'm you, but I'm me and you're you. And it's very annoying, because we can see that what he's deploying here is the kind of collectivization that he's been critical of before. That he's been critical of when the left does it. But here he's doing it toward Hamas. And I think that people are seeing through the bullshit that were presented in the last few days, the support for Netanyahu has plummeted since the outbreak of fighting, according to a poll. Anger at the current Israeli government for its perceived security failures has been growing since Saturday. Only 29% of respondents thought Netanyahu should be prime minister, as opposed to 48% who preferred the National Unity Party leader, Benny Gantz. Some 23% replied, don't know, in response to the question. So that's in Israel, but I think there's also a lot of people who are feeling uncomfortable with the behavior of Israel in this whole thing. The far right is amazed at seeing the Jews suddenly make their arguments that they were making years ago. The far left anti-war is, of course, very opposed to Israel and sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. And I think that one of the processes that we're seeing is a middle getting smaller and smaller and measuring the extent to which they are losing power. Because I don't think people will blindly want to follow Israel the way they did in the Iraq-Afghanistan case. I think there's going to be much more of a restraint and much more of a measure by the elites that they don't have the American people in their hand, that they don't they don't have here a public that's willing to follow the Ben Shapiro of this world in this bloodthirsty campaign of theirs. That is it for tonight. Much love, everyone, and I will see you all tomorrow. Perhaps we should schedule the Patreon hangout. Now, I've been super busy this month, so I might be a little late on scheduling it. Normally, I tend to do between the 10th and the 20th. But let me check my messages. I wanted to make sure that where do I see my messages? Wanted to make sure that people who have some needs, people who have preferred days, they get their preferred days. Where is it? that I've gotten this message by someone who was a supporter. Manage my profile. Locals.com. Because we have one member that talks to me through locals.com. But I've lost my... How do I get to my messages in there? I don't know. Anyways, if I remember correctly... Well, you know, let's wait for tomorrow. I'm going to find her message to make sure that we are at the... At the day, or maybe she talked to me on Discord. No. What I'm going to do is we're going to wait for tomorrow before we schedule the Patreon hangout. It's probably going to be next Monday, but in like a week from now. That is it for tonight, boys. Thank you for being here, and I will see you all tomorrow.